Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. Boy, I tell you, I love it when I know in advance that I have a good show. just because of what we're going to talk about today and who I have on. And most of you should already be familiar with who I have on today because they've been on before, some more times than others. But the subject matter is different. We are talking, it's Father's Day coming up this Sunday, for those of you that don't know and haven't gotten your gifts yet or whatever, but we are talking about a serious subject when it comes to fathers, and that is black men rearing young black men, okay, because things have so much changed in the way of how we are to raise these young men. Some's the same. Some of the conversations have been the same for years. So I can stop rattling on. I am going to ask the gentleman to, I guess you could say reintroduce themselves. Let me start with Burton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How are you?
Okay, that's all he's going to say. Burton Kelso, our Tech Thursday guru, who will be back on sometime this week. We're going to try anyway. Might have to do some juggling. Paul?
Good morning.
Golly, people try to act like they're shy. Paul Z. Shelton, he's our economist of Warwick Shore. James, I know you haven't been on. James, are you there?
Yes, ma'am. It's James Simmons. I'm a personal injury attorney here in Central Florida.
And we had James on last year when we were talking about CBER. And we have a more talkative brother on, Kevin.
Hey, good morning. You're right. I like to talk. I've been on the show multiple times. I'm a civil rights attorney and also a criminal defense practitioner out of South Florida.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. So where do we begin? Let's talk about who has the youngest child? I want to know who has the youngest child, first of all. Who has the youngest,
My child is 26.
And I think that's Paul, right?
It may be. I have a 9-month-old boy.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
and
you beat me. This is James Simmons. Mine just turned 3 today.
Happy birthday. Yay. Okay, who has the oldest young black man? I think that's you.
My son is 26 years old.
Okay.
Yeah, you got us beat.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So we've got a range. So let me first ask. I'm just not sure where to go from here. When do you first start having conversations about race? Any of you, jump in.
When they come out the womb, I guess. No, seriously, I would say probably around when they're able to comprehend a conversation, probably around 4 or 5, I would imagine. It starts there because my boys, they went to a predominantly white school, and I think the teachers had that conversation with them in advance, not like in a positive manner that you're mixed race, but just not in a negative manner either, but just referring to them as black. So I think the challenge is the sooner that they understand that in today's society that you are considered black, you know, regardless of being of mixed race or of being full African-American, then that conversation needs to start so that they can understand their place in society and understand what things they need to do in order to become successful in life.
You know, and for me, I am, you know, in an interracial marriage. So the conversation concerning race came up pretty early. You know, my son, you know, obviously he sees that, you know, I look like Sidney Poitier. And, you know, his mom, you know, she's looking, you know, like Mariah Carey. So, you know, in his mind, he's wondering, okay, what's going on here? You know, so we had that discussion, you know, with him as early as probably, you know, 7 years old or so. But it's a lot easier to talk about, like, people being, you know, human beings and not there being a, you know, a whole racial dynamic when, you know, they're younger. And you can begin to talk about why daddy looks this way and mommy looks the other way. And then you just kind of go from there as things develop, you know. There's no script, in other words. You know, as things develop, you know, you will have the those situational discussions.
And I'll get from my perspective. Didn't mean to cut.
Who was that, you, James?
Yes. I was going to say, from my perspective, I've got a, you know, he turned three today, and then I've got a seven-year-old. And for my seven-year-old, we probably started having talks with him around six, you know, when he was about 6 years old. And mostly, or maybe about five, but mostly because, you know, obviously, you know, he started seeing differences in appearance and things like that. But then we kind of gradually, you know, my wife, she's you know, I love her, man. She's as pro-black as she can be. So she always wants to kind of mention some things to him and kind of advise things to him when things pop up, which is awesome. And so, you know, even as little as, you know, we've got Juneteenth coming up, and we started celebrating that as a family a couple years ago so that he could, you know, kind of take some pride in, you know, where he comes from and things like that. And so those, you know, celebrating those types of holidays and, you know, kind of acknowledging some of the things that, you know, our people have contributed to society and things like that have allowed him to kind of get a perspective of, you know, who he comes from or who he is. And then it's more so, you know, obviously we talk to him about some of the negative things that, you know, we endure and things we face. But it gives them a little bit more context, so it's not all just, you know, negativity or all just, you know, things where he needs to be worried, you know, all the time. It's also, you know, some uplifting things that we try to impart on him. Now, obviously, with a three-year-old, we got a little bit of time with him, but, I mean, those discussions will start, you know, as soon as he starts communicating a little bit more as well.
That's it from my perspective. I have a – go ahead, Gretch, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. I'm here for y'all.
So
go
I
ahead.
Have a 10-year-old, 10-year-old, 4-year-old, 9-month-old boys, and then a 6-year-old girl. But I think our discussion with the oldest one, I should say the 10-year-old, I can't really pinpoint, unfortunately, exactly when it started. There's always been a conversation. He does have an uncle that's white, aunt black. There's interracial cousins that, you know, he plays with and he has enjoys and loves. I can't pinpoint exactly when the conversation started, but you do know kids at a young age, they can see the difference, they understand it. But it's been something that my wife and I have always embraced, the conversation of differences and how everyone is beautiful in their own way. So even though we may have different opinions, different skin colors, different tones, we try to celebrate as much as possible the unity within that. And given everything that's taken place over the last year and change, it really has given us an opportunity to sit down and kind of take more charge of the conversation instead of just having a passive conversation about it, to take more charge of the conversation and really understanding and explaining to him, you know, what his heritage is, what the history of this country has been, and the role that he will play as a young black man growing up. And I think that even though the conversation isn't as direct with the four-year-old, him being around picks up the essence of that flavor as well. So I think it's something that's going to mature through all of my boys, honestly.
Okay, so which conversation comes first, the race conversation or the sex conversation?
I think race.
I'll answer that. Yeah, I think race, too. I think race comes first, and I actually just had an encounter with that with my 10-year-old asking me questions about the other subject. But race is something that naturally comes first because it's what we see first. And as much as you try to protect them from any negatives that may come across, whether it's through social media or TV or anything of that nature, they're going to be exposed to it. So I think it's our responsibility, or at least I take that as my responsibility as dad to embrace it and help him, you know, through that conversation.
Okay, so I know for me, and I won't say it wasn't discussed. I can't necessarily remember when it was discussed, but I know my mom always said that the first time that I had heard or someone called me the N-word was when I was in, I won't say the name, but a downtown Catholic school very early years. It had to be, I would say, somewhere between no later than second grade, but maybe around kindergarten or first grade. And it wasn't that, you know, I didn't know differences in race because my father had, you know, Caucasian friends that actually had been to our house. And at the time, at this time, we lived over in Washington Shores, and, you know, which is predominantly black neighborhood. So it was just interesting that we had white people in and out of our house, you know, visiting because they developed close friendships. But I guess in terms of encountering the negatives, it's unfortunate that it had to be a Christian-based school, of course, in order for that to happen. Did any of your boys encounter the name calling, and at what age? Gentlemen?
The first time I experienced it personally was in fourth grade when we moved to Florida. Prior to that, my father was in the military, and we lived overseas for a while. So I remember it. I was in fourth grade in PE and lined up, and a boy, I remember his name. He called me the N-word, and I looked at him, and I was like, I don't know what that means. And I was like, he said it out of anger and frustration, so I guess I should be offended, but I really didn't know. And I went home and told my parents, you know, what happened, because another kid came up to me and said, hey, I don't feel that way about you. And I'm thinking, what way? I'm like, what did he just say? He said something, obviously, but I don't know what it is. My parents explained it to me, what it meant, and then that's when, I guess, the conversation and everything took place for me at the age of 10. That has happened with my son, and you know, not just, you know, with my kids, my daughter too, but my son, you know, has experienced that where, you know, kids won't especially say the word, but, you know, he's come home and said, someone told me that I was ugly because my skin is dark, or, you know, they don't like me because of this, because of that. It's a very, very, you know, gut-wrenching thing to go through and to realize your kids are experiencing this. It's, you know, and you feel hopeless and helpless at a certain degree because you're not at the school and you can't foster the conversation and show something different. So, you know, that's what really, you know, I guess the experience that I have from, I should say, from a parental standpoint.
So should these conversations be happening before or after the fact? Before the encounter or after the encounter? I mean, especially our young men, do they need to be prepared for this might happen? Or do you just encounter it? This did happen. This is why this probably happened. Go ahead.
Definitely. Yeah, because you've got to prepare them for that incident so, you know, they don't lash out in anger and get in trouble at school. But at the same time that you can empower them to take the proper steps, because I know the N-word was used against my oldest son, not in anger, but just some ignorant white kid making a racially insensitive joke. And, you know, my wife was like, well, you know, you just ignore that. And I'm like, heck no. That's hate speech. He needs to go to the nearest authority at school and report it. That's mm-hmm. not something to be taken lightly, you know. And in order to start the process of defeating hate speech like that, it needs to be made aware and, you know, punished for using comments like that. I mean, obviously it comes from the parents, but the school needs to make a stance to say that we're not going to tolerate this type of speech. And, of course, if you don't tell, then how is the school going to know? But also on that same note, I think, you know, as far as after, I mean, I think it's continuing education because, you know, we as all African Americans realize that, you know, racial intensity can occur at any time. So you've got to educate your kids in the sense of that they are aware and know how to prepare against any incident that may happen, whether it be verbal or physical. And so that way they can have the right steps of what to do and also understand where all of it's coming from.
Yeah, I think people are more on guard today than, you know, years and years ago where there would have been some, you know, some verbal assault against black people. So they're not just going to walk up to you for the most part and use the N-word. You may overhear it. And there are instances, of course, where it does happen. But I think, you know, preparing, you know, your child for what they're experiencing in terms of the racist attitudes towards them and in, you know, the school environment and, you know, in interacting with other children, like your peers when you're also out and about. I think training them to recognize these insensitivities and these racist maneuvers to sort of pull the supremacy card on you, I think that's probably more valuable than keeping an ear out for that one trigger word, you know, because, you know, a word is a word, but when there are systems put in place and when there are actions that people undertake deliberately to undermine who you are and what you look like and what your past consists of, that's what you need to prepare your children to overcome, you know, because, you know, particularly like, for example, you know, in Florida here, you know, the critical race theory has been removed from the school system altogether. So in other mm-hmm. words, like yeah. there is no education of black children regarding where they came from and what their achievements consisted of and what's happening around you regarding, you know, people who are out here moving and shaking in the community. So they're like these, like, you know, essentially they don't know what's going on. If you don't, like, know about, you know, things today, and if your parents don't talk to you about, like, you know, your black history, you're going to be left out there because the school system has eliminated the possibility of you learning anything that's going to be greater than just the bare basics that you're getting from the curriculum as it existed of yesteryear.
So have any of you been caught in a racially sensitive situation in front of your sons and you had to kind of make a decision in terms of how you dealt with it and you had to kind of maybe do some explaining to your son? Any of you?
You know, I remember one time my son and I, we were going, just he and I, you know, dad and son, we were going on a little journey. And so we had to spend the night at Hampton Inn. And so, you know, here I am, you know, this, you know, 6 foot black man with this, you know, little teeny, you know, kid who was, you know, it looked like he wasn't my son. I'll just say that. And so I, you know, we're, you know, checking into this hotel, and the people were kind of looking like, well, what's going on here? You know, what's going on here? And so, you know, there came a point where, you know, I felt a little uncomfortable, you know, because I all eyes were on me, and I kind of, and I would look at them, and they would look at the ceiling or look out the window or you know, look down at what they were doing. And then, you know, so I'd give them a head fake, and then I'd come back real quick, and then here they are looking at me again. I'm like, what in the hell is going on here? You know, what do they think, that I just abducted some kid or something, and I'm getting ready to take him in the room and, you know, have my way with them? What are y'all thinking here? Come on, guys. You know, we're in the 21st century. You know, there are interracial relationships, and there are people who literally take their children with them when they go shopping or when they go on trips. So he didn't recognize it, you know, but at some point, you know, I did talk with him about that experience, and, you know, that was something I just felt like he needed to kind of know, because that wasn't going to be the last occasion where something similar to that was going to happen.
Someone else was going to say something too, I thought I heard. No one?
Oh, I was just going to say I have never run into that situation at all with my son. Now, I will say, and I know this is kind of off the subject, with my stepdaughter, who was white, I had to worry about. Oh, and it goes into a whole detail with that. That's like for another G Power Hour. But I was in constant fear with her, you know, just thinking that what's this black guy doing with this, you know, white child. So, but as far as my sons, no, we've unfortunately never been in situations like that at all. So, you know, knock on wood.
Okay.
And I guess that's kind of, you know, my perspective too. I kind of dread that day. And I say that because, you know, my boys are young now. And I think the reason why, you know, some of the discussions happen with my 7-year-old is more so because, you know, he's aloof, you know what I mean? So if I'll ask him to describe one of his friends to me, you know, he's a sweet kid. He'll just talk about what their hair looks like, or what they were wearing, something like that. And the automatic thing that I'm looking for, I'm thinking of, is, you know, well, what skin color they are, so I can kind of pick out which friend you're talking about, or whatever. So then, you know, that rolls into some conversations. But the, you know, I know that he's going to at some point, you know, deal with things that I have in the past. I mean, I grew up in rural North Carolina, so, you know, this was, you know, commonplace for people to make fun of you, call you names. You know, there were grocery stores where I actually got followed around with my dad, you know, to see if we were stealing stuff, that kind of thing that was going on. And it may not be out, you know, in your face as it used to be back in the day, but, you know, I know at some point, you know, my boys are gonna be confronted with that. And, you know, that's more so why we take the proactive steps of kind of talking to them about it and letting them know, hey, look, there are some people who are ignorant, and this is the best they can do, you know, to try to offend you is to go to something basic like that. And so, you know, more so, you know, advising them how to react to that situation and make sure that, you know, it doesn't get beyond a certain point, or you know what to do when it happens. And so, you know, that, like I said, that's a real fear that I think all of us fathers have had at some point. And just to hear, you know, some of the brothers on the line saying that, you know, somebody, you know, actually called their son an N-word, and they had to explain to him, you know, what that was about. I mean, that, I mean, it's a shocking reality, but it breaks your heart.
So now, what about, is there a conversation at any point about how to deal with police?
Okay. Let me jump in on that one. Yeah, man. Yeah, definitely. And you know, we're talking about our experiences, but I think the listening audience is, they want to know, like, what do we do? Because, like, you know, we're not typical people. You know, we, for the most part, you know, we've encountered what's out there in literature, and also we've thought about it because of discussions just like this. So we're kind of armed, you know, with what we need to do when something like that happens of a racially discriminatory level. But when it comes to a day-to-day encounter with law enforcement, that's what I think people they want to hear. I will tell you this. The first thing that I think people should consider is avoiding an opportunity for that police interaction. A lot of the trouble begins when people don't prepare their children for what doesn't have to happen. You know, these kids, they want to drive 100 miles an hour in their cars, you know, these new drivers, these 16, 17-year-olds, and they're mostly boys who think that they can just get away with, like, you know, ripping when running with daddy's car up and down the freeway. Like, man, drive the speed limit, okay? Because if you get stopped for speeding, that's an occasion for law enforcement to screw with you, all right? This whole deal about music. You know, you want to play your music at these like 12 decibel levels where, you know, you can hear it from a block away. You know, you are a attention gathering target at that. What you're asking for is you're asking for police intervention. Once again, here we go. That's another occasion for your orbits to interact, you know, with law enforcement, and the likelihood of something happening if you're a black male is pretty great. All right. So you got to minimize the opportunity for these dudes to hurt you and to kill you. And we're not doing that, you know, and we're not telling these guys, like, hey, listen, man, like lay low, you know, stop speeding, you know, turn the music down. Well, how about this move? Like, you know, and this is not just, you know, for black boys. This is for black men, because boys become men and they need to know it now before they become a man. They want to carry guns. Everybody wants to carry a gun. You know, and okay, that's your Second Amendment right in some places to even do it concealed. But understand this. When you get stopped by the police and you have a gun, the likelihood of you being killed, like, increases, like, you know, 100-fold. You know, if the police officer sees a gun on the seat, if you reach in to pull the gun out in order to, you know, disarm yourself, you know, man, people get shot all day and all night because law enforcement interprets that as an aggressive, threatening move. You know, so think about that. Think about, like, you know, what you need to do when you're carrying these weapons, man, to avoid being mistaken as an aggressive person, or to be lied on as a person who is trying to, like, shoot or hurt law enforcement. I think someone in Minneapolis was just killed, like, the other week again, for something just like what I'm describing. You know, again, something just happened again.
So, I'm sorry, go ahead, please.
I was going to say, to piggyback off of that, I mean, the issue, you know, is, you know, goes beyond social class, economic status. I mean, we've probably got some affluent men here on the show today. And the fear is just as real for one of us versus someone who's in a low economic, you know, community. And, you know, play devil's advocate a little bit. Sometimes there isn't anything that our kids or ourselves do in particular that, you know, would invite some of these interactions. And it is something where, you know, you do have to you got to be kind of like helicopter dad a lot of times. I mean, my wife was just telling me, she just finished the Gabrielle Union's new book, and she was talking about her relationship with Dwayne Wade and his sons. And I guess in their, you know, multi-million-dollar, you know, housing community. You know, Dwayne Wade got a pass to go to one of his neighbor's houses and play basketball or work out at their mansion where they had like a gym and all this other stuff. So, you know, his sons would like to do that too. And so one night, you know, they, you know, wanted to go play basketball, and they went by Gabrielle Union. She said, no, it's 9 o'clock at night. You guys are two black boys. You're not going to be walking down this nice neighborhood going to this guy's house. You know, why don't you ask your father, you know? He wasn't thinking. They asked D-Wade, hey, can we go play ball at so-and-so's house? D-Wade wasn't thinking. He was like, hey, yeah, go ahead, man. You know, just here's the key, and, you know, just lock up before you leave. So anyways, you know, Gabrielle Union realizes that the boys aren't at the house anymore. She runs over to talk to him, and he's like, oh, yeah, I sent them over to the neighbor's house. They want to go play ball, and she flips out. And she's like, it's late at night. Your boys are black. You don't understand that, you know, we've got a bunch of white neighbors who, when they see them, are going to think that they're doing something. And lo and behold, you know, this kind of, you know, triggered something for him. And he was like, all right, let's jump in our golf cart. I mean, this is a nice neighborhood. Let's jump in our golf cart and go find them, you know, bring them back home. And on the way to, you know, the neighbor's house, there were already patrol cars going to pick their sons up. And fortunately, they saw the golf cart first, pulled over and asked them, you know, we're going to see what they were doing. And then said, oh, that's Dwayne Wade. Yeah, you live over here, blah, blah, blah. And fortunately, that little break in talking to those police officers kept, you know, was allowed their sons to, you know, kind of, you know, slow up so that they could catch up to their sons and pick them up. But it was a situation where, you know, again, they weren't doing anything, but they were going to be seen as two black boys, you know, trying to work their way into somebody's house. And so, you know, I don't need to take up a whole bunch of time, but one of the things that happened yesterday, you know, my 7-year-old wanted to play cops and robbers, and, you know, dad got to be the cop. And it was that right then I was thinking to myself, like, geez, do I really already, you know, need to kind of start talking to him about why this veiled, you know, lovely perception he has of cops and what they, you know, what they serve for our community, because a lot of them are, you know, they're good people. But at the same time, I can't discount the fact that there are horrific things that happen to our people and other people of color based off these interactions. And so, you know, how do I play with him in that scenario and still keep his innocence but still be able to kind of give him a point that, hey, this is not fun. This is not just, you know, you got to be smart. And then it takes play out of it. It makes it, you know, it makes you not even want to do anything like that with your kid. So it's like, again, I mean, that discussion has to happen, because even if it's something innocent and they're not doing anything wrong, they may still be approached. And, you know, we've seen it time and time again. They're, you know, it may be that they just fit a description or whatever they use to, you know, support or validate the reasoning for a stop or for that interaction. And, you know, we have to, in order to protect our kids, have to kind of break it down to them that, look, you are automatically going to be a target because of what you look like. And so some of the responses you give, some of the actions you make when you're talking to law enforcement or somebody who feels like they have some sort of authority over you, although it's not right, although it's not fair, you do have to respect the fact that your life is more valuable than someone's quick decisions. And so you got to put yourself in the best position. And unfortunately, that does mean complying a lot when sometimes that, you know, may not be the fairest thing in the world. But it's a decision of, do I, you know, bend in order to make it to the next destination, or do I become difficult? And like the brother just said, you know, cause something to escalate. Not even cause it, but you know, an opportunity for something to escalate to where they don't make it past that interaction.
Wow.
Okay. We are having our Father's Day conversation with four gentlemen, to talk about black men raising young black men. We have Kevin Anderson, civil rights attorney. We have James Simmons, who is a personal injury attorney. We have Burton Kelso, our tech guru from Tech Thursday, and we have Paul Z. Shelton, our economist with Warwick Shores. So the number, if anybody has questions or wants to join the conversation, is 516-387-1944. That's 516-387-1944. So well, how do your spouses or significant others react in terms of how you deal with your young black man? Is there a lot of conflict? Do they kind of defer to you as being the authority? What comes up when these certain situations come up?
Oh, we're still here. We're just trying to think.
Oh. Yeah. I guess I'll jump in. Yeah, I'll jump in on that one too. I think from a maternal standpoint, it's always that love. And sometimes from a paternal standpoint, it's always that education where we have to groom you and get you ready. I'm of the mindset that, you know, my wife gave birth to children, but it's our responsibility to raise adults. So I approach it from that standpoint, just in general from that standpoint. And I would say for me and the evolution of my wife and my marriage over the last 14 years we've been married, my wife has changed. She understands my perspective now. She understands that I'm not going to kill him or any of the boys. I'm raising them, and I have to give it to them real. Sometimes I can't sugarcoat it. I can't beat around the bush and just hope that they're going to get it one day and hope that they're going to understand. But there comes sometimes with my 10-year-old, where he starts to become, you know, of himself, and he challenges, you know, authority, which I expect him to do, and which I never try to smother that spirit, but I try to encourage it in the right direction. So there is times where he and I, it feels like we may need to go put on boxing gloves and go hammer it out. But, you know, it's always done from the standpoint of love and education. I always explain to all the kids, you know, why your dad's approach is what it is. They give them the stark reality of where life is. As a black male, you're not on the even playing field. That's just the bottom line. I see it in my business and the business that I own and how I operate. Things are just not going to be fair. So with the 10-year-old, that is an active conversation that I've had to have with him. And my wife has reinforced that as well, which I am grateful for, that you are not on an even playing field. You can't expect to do the same things that your counterparts may be able to do and get away with it. You will be labeled in school. You will be ridiculed. You will be talked about. You will be thrown in the system if that's what they want to do. So for me, it has been much easier, and my wife fully supports it. There may be times where, you know, she has to turn her head and say, hey, I'm going to step out the room and let you and your daddy talk. But, you know, she understands where my perspective is, where I'm coming from. And at the same time, she offers a good checks and balances. So she does, you know, let me know that, you know, take some extra time with him, take him out for chicken wings or whatever, and y'all need to just go talk. And then we'll hammer it out from there.
Okay. Anybody else?
Y'all
still thinking on this one?
From my side of it, I mean, my spouse, I mean, we kind of tag team, you know, pretty,
okay.
You know, these types. Hello?
Yeah, I'm still here. We're still here.
Okay.
Go ahead. You tag team?
We just tag team some of these situations because obviously, so I'm mixed race myself. I'm half black and half Indian, and so my wife is, you know, she's African American obviously, but so you know, our boys are lighter, are fair skin, you know, so, you know, sometimes they get a pass because, you know, they'll look, you know, they come off maybe Hispanic to some folks, the way they look, but I mean, either way, you know, in the majority of everybody's eyes, they're minorities. And so, you know, typically, unless it's something that has to do with like guy stuff, meaning sex or whatever, you know, body part stuff like that, you know, she'll defer to me about that kind of stuff. But if it's race, it just depends on who's in the situation that will kind of break it down to them. And fortunately, she's pretty blunt, so she will, you know, kind of break it down to them and you know, not really hold back too much, which, you know, I appreciate because, in my opinion, you know, as young men, unfortunately, you do have to harden them or toughen them up to certain things because they're going to face much worse based off of our own experiences.
I agree with that 100%, and that's one thing I appreciate about my wife. She's very blunt as well. She does not sugarcoat or hide anything, so that we complement that well.
So to the gentlemen on who have mixed race children, how did they identify, and who made that decision? Was it the children, or did you make that decision for them? And so, either of you.
Pretty easy for me. I have a second marriage, so. My son is a white man, that's pretty clear. And he's raised in an interracial marital environment, you know, we live in communities where he has generally had predominantly black friends, and. You know, he's also done a lot of interaction with Latino friends. So, and he has white friends too. But for the most part, you know, he has black and Latino friends. And you know, he has not encountered the same things that someone who is of a darker complexion might. But on the other hand, he's been in situations where. You know, because he is white, he's been able to kind of recon the scenario, and he'll come back and say, "Look, man, that ain't cool over there," or like, "Did you know so and so said this, or did you know so and so believed that and this?" You know, that kind of thing. You know, and like the other co-contributor here today, I've got daughters who are black. And they've experienced some of the things that we were probably trying to get us to deal with today. But we're here as fathers to talk about black men. So that's my contribution to what's going on with my son. So maybe he doesn't have the same – no, I'm not going to say maybe. I'm going to say he doesn't. He doesn't have the same susceptibility as a black person would who – would kind of be in the same situations.
Who else? Burton? Decision? Was it yours or was it theirs?
I mean, from my perspective, fortunately, I haven't had, you know, like I said, you know, this last year, my oldest, he's been in virtual school, so he hasn't, you know, had to deal with, I guess, you know, how when we were coming up, you got testing where you have to kind of elect your race and different things like forms you fill out and stuff like that. He hasn't gotten to that stage yet. He's going to be doing live school this coming year, so I'm pretty sure that we'll be having this conversation a little bit more so before that begins. But you know, fortunately, like I said, he's still innocent in a lot of ways, and so he just sees himself as brown, and you know, or he'll describe other kids that look like him as, oh, that's, you know, he's a brown boy. Now he says that, you know, like before he was just talking about hair color and clothes. So I would assume that he probably got the more description about color from me and my wife, as we've kind of been talking to him about why those things may be important to some or stick out or whatever. And so, you know, now he classifies folks as brown or he won't even say white. He'll say, you know, she's lighter or he's lighter. But I think it's more, you know, he's still innocent, you know. So, unfortunately, you know, I feel like as school gets closer, I've got to crush some of that innocence a little bit more just to kind of further expound on what he may run into, you know, as that new, you know, part of life starts.
Mm-hmm. So my question now is, George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, some of these types of cases, what kind of discussions have you had with your sons, and what kind of questions have they had of you regarding these incidents?
Just to be careful when they're out there, that you can't get away with the same thing that these white kids will do, and like the gentleman said earlier, just not to draw yourself to be a target, you know, mm-hmm. when you're out and about. So don't act a fool and don't draw attention to yourself, and make sure if you get pulled over by law enforcement to make sure that you comply with all of their instructions, know your rights, and, you know, just try to stay safe.
Or like my husband would say, don't drive a red car.
He just isn't
into the red. I can't get a red car because of him. So anyway, what were you getting ready to say? I think, Paul, you were getting ready to say something.
Yeah, I think that, you know, with everything that has happened, my 10-year-old asked me the question as to, you know, why, you know, and there's so many whys, you know, why was a black person killed by a cop, or why was a black person killed by a cop again, and why again, and all these questions, and we're answering them and talking to them and give them the history of the country and let them know that there is that racial inequity that still exists that is very strong. And I am very, very pointed to tell him that things aren't fair and equal, but that doesn't mean that all white cops are bad, nor does it mean that all black cops are good. You have to judge people based on their character and judge them accordingly. At the same time, like it's been, you know, restated on this call, you have to be prudent and understanding of your surroundings, when and how to get yourself and to conduct yourself at the same time. One thing, you know, that the gentleman mentioned before is about, you know, those that want to carry a gun and how to, and that's your amendment right, and it is your amendment right to do so. And that's something that I talk about with my son as well. I introduced him to firearms, and I gave him the understanding on that, and I educated him on that, and how to be a responsible gun owner. He is not a gun owner at this time, but I am. So I educated him on that. And, you know, further taught him in a live example. It may have been about 6 or 7 months ago. We got pulled over on I-4 coming back from Tampa. Understandable, no reason why I was pulled over. I didn't receive a ticket or anything. The cop said I, you know, changed lanes abruptly or did whatever. I didn't say anything. I kept my hands on the stairwell. And I, you know, he finished talking to me, and the cop was being very smart mouth. And I left that situation and told the kids, you know, why I behaved the way I did, why I acted the way I did, and why I did not appear to be aggressive. They see me as their father, and they know that I don't stand down to anything. But there does come a point in time where you have to sometimes, like you said earlier, to get to that next stop in life. I remember my grandfather who grew up in Arkansas, born in 1918. He said many a time that he had to bite his tongue. When I was a little boy, I didn't understand what that meant. But as an adult, as a parent, I fully understand what that means to bite your tongue. Understanding that when my grandfather was raising my mother, my aunts and uncles during the 1940s, 50s, and 60s in rural Arkansas, and he had 18 kids he had to raise, he could not lash out against people. He could not be aggressive against people that refused to pay him all the time the way he wanted to, in a way he probably would have been justified in doing so. So I think we have to, as fathers, you know, really embrace those opportunities where we get time to educate our kids in real life on how things are going. And I'm grateful for that incident happening in real life. I have the frustrations about it. And even my son said, why don't you call Garrett, his uncle, who is a state trooper who has some seniority. And he was like, you can probably tell on that guy. And I was like, I probably could. But I was like, it's just, I want you guys to know this. I want you guys to be educated in this respect for today and going forward.
Okay, well, we got a little bit of time left. I want to go around real quick in a minute or two each. I'd like for you to give your advice based on your experience and your knowledge on what you would say would be the key components, the key things that, let's say, black men with young black boys trying to raise them, and the young black men, what would you say to them? And I'm going to start with you, James. What would you say?
The first thing, you know, for me is more so you have to, you know, take time out to sit them down and seriously talk to them about, you know, the realities of our world. And, you know, don't, like we've said a couple times here, you know, unfortunately we don't have the ability to sugarcoat these things because, you know, if you give them a false hope or a false impression of what to expect, you know, things can go south. And you know, there is a thin line of, you know, giving them too much information based off of age and things like that. But at the end of the day, if you can just be, you know, upfront with them and, you know, kind of caution them ahead of time, I think that's probably the best you could do.
Paul?
I agree with that. I think the more that we can educate our kids, and I think that in general, the more education we have, the greater good for all of humanity. So the more we can educate them just on life and not sugarcoat them. You know, I run a business, and I was recently discriminated against, and I shared this with you, Gretchen, with a real estate matter. And, you know, that was something I used as an opportunity to share with my kids. Not to highlight that, oh, racism is everywhere, to highlight that your father still perseveres through all of these things that can arise against him. And I want you to do the same as well. And I think if we can educate our kids, and not sugarcoat it, but prepare them for life as it is, they'll be much better prepared.
Burton?
I agree with everyone as far as education. The only thing that I would add is that obviously it's got to be continued education and just show them every aspect of life. And I think another good thing is just to educate them on history as far as the whole civil rights struggle. I mean, we took our boys down to the National Civil Rights Museum down in Memphis, Tennessee, just to kind of give them the whole background as far as, you know, slavery and the slave trade and just how it's built up and how certain things have changed, you know. But obviously we've got a long way to go. But I think letting them know and see that history of how things have evolved isn't important because what's that old saying? If you don't know your past, you don't know your future.
You'll repeat it.
Or it's something like you're doomed to repeat it also. I think that's one of the phrases I've heard too.
Yeah. Right.
So, Mr. Anderson.
Thank you. Well, for openers, we have to raise our children. We can't let systems and other people direct our children. We have to raise them ourselves, and that requires being present. And as black men, the reality is that there are a number of black young men who are in environments where there are not people, men, who can do that. So the reality is that you're probably going to raise one or two who aren't yours. Understand that, who are listening to me, you know, because there are boys out there who are looking at you. They're watching you, and you are the father of someone who is going to be able to do something that someone else can contribute from. Trust me, there are a lot of great men who didn't have a man around, but they looked at the man who was nearby, and they were able to get some things from him. So understand that you are a role model. Number two, for the black boys who will become men, don't be an opportunity. Don't give the police an opportunity to mess with you. Minimize that with the music, the racing of the cars. You want to vape? Yeah, you think that's cool, but that odor of marijuana brings police to you. If you think it doesn't, try it. Finally, I think we as men have to exemplify. We have to, by example, show these men, these boys, you know, what it's like to be responsible, what it's like to handle ourselves as real men in a culture where we have responsibility and where we have people who are being guided by and led by our actions. So, you know, that's where I am with it. Is it going to solve a whole bunch? It may not, but I think it's going to help.
Okay. All right. So I really appreciate you all taking this time. Any particular plans you guys got on Father's Day? Any Father's Day wishes? Let's quickly. What would you want for a Father's Day gift? Go around real quick.
I just want time.
I want a pair of cycling shoes.
Okay. Time, cycling shoes. Anybody else?
I would go with time as well.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll echo that as well. I think we're going to celebrate Juneteenth out at the beach and, you know, just spending that time with those kids, man. It's not even Father's Day. It should be every day, man. I'm blessed to have a family with so many people who wish they could be a father. So.
Mm-hmm. Cool. We are blessed with your conversation, gentlemen. Thank you so very much, and have a wonderful Father's Day, blessed Father's Day, and Juneteenth also as well. So, and first day of summer coming up too as well. So just go and have a good time. Thank you, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thank you all for listening.
This has been G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Be well, be safe, be blessed, and please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.
He'll make it all right.